No, you're dodging my question. An openly gay person running for president.
Oh, it couldn't happen.
No, you couldn't run as a Republican.
No, I absolutely agree. Yeah. It is true that the big tent of the Democratic Party certainly would be the home for such a person.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is not whether or not one is straight or gay. The question is, and this is most crucial, what is that person's politics? And this guy, with no experience in the national arena, with a bad record in his own hometown, is able to capture a lot of people because I think it's about wish fulfillment.
Oh, certainly. But I'd say the Democratic electorate, the left-leaning electorate in general, has been guilty of that forever and ever and ever.
Right.
All right. Buttigieg is a Navy reservist. Did time as a naval intelligence officer in Afghanistan for a seven-month tour.
Okay.
Yeah.
He wasn't a Marine?
No. Navy reserve.
Why did I think that?
I don't know.
That's interesting. Okay. We got a lot of people calling us today. There was a bunch of stuff I really can't help bringing up. I want to point out something very hopeful, and it's easy to forget it. We stopped the destruction of the ozone layer.
It's true.
And that was a while back, but that was a real serious struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And if we could stop that foolishness, it seems like it's possible to stop a lot of other environmental craziness.
Well, I don't know if it's a straight, series of one-to-one comparisons, but I take your point, yeah. And it was relatively simple to solve that problem.
I think what we need is radical optimism.
Oh, I think you're right.
And I think that's absolutely appropriate.
Well, wait, don't we do this show every week and you accuse me of being unhealthily and perhaps delusionally optimistic?
But that's just the characters we play on the radio.
Oh, that's the characters we play on the radio. I see.
Yeah. Everybody ought to know that we're nothing like these people.
You leave here, you go home, you sit in front of a big hearth, you put on a velvet smoking jacket, and then you...
A velvet smoking...
You pick up a pipe.
What the hell is a velvet smoking jacket? Is that a thing?
I'm just trying to draw a distinction between the character you're playing now and the aristocrat that you are in real life.
Oh, right. Yeah. Just think of me as, what's his name, the Playboy Bunny...
Hefner.
The Playboy Bunny pimp.
You're just like him. Exactly.
Didn't he die?
Yeah, he did.
Okay. Well, that's fair. Oh, my goodness. We've got to be really serious here. Because there's a lot of scary stuff going on. And I want to make clear something. I have not, and I don't believe you have on the air, first of all, we're not allowed under the law to advocate for a specific candidate.
No, we cannot make an endorsement.
One of the reasons why we don't.
Right.
But the other reason why I don't is there's a lot to go before the end of that Democratic race.
Oh, indeed. It's still 9 months away.
But, I'm more and more convinced that the way that the Democratic Party has to go, even though Trump is so scary, is not to get someone like the old vice president.
Biden is his name.
Yeah, that Biden, right. I forgot because I'm old. No, actually, that's not the way to go. The way to go is to declare a reasonable social democratic program, to be very specific, to even indicate costs if it's possible, and I think it is, and really to find the angels of our better nature. Otherwise, it doesn't... I mean, getting rid of Trump is a good idea, but, fascists what are you going to
do? Are you suggesting that's an acceptable option?
What, fascism?
No, the re-election of Donald Trump.
Oh, I see what you're saying. No.
Okay.
It's not an acceptable option. It's very, very possible. It's, in fact...
It is very possible.
Very scary. The thing is that people, there's weird people. There's senators who believe that the crash of 08 wasn't due to bad banking practices and so on, but was in fact due to the end of redlining. Things like that.
Yeah, I've heard that argument put forth.
I mean,
well.
it's really, really, really weird how ideology of the right is actually based on fantasies and myths, and how people really glom onto that.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, I've been arguing with some people on Twitter. Not a good pastime. I advise against it.
Really?
Don't argue with people on Twitter.
Don't argue
with
people anywhere.
It's a waste of time.
What the hell?
Oh, no, that's not. That's good. But on Twitter, no. The people that generally believe that there was no wrongdoing that Trump did nothing wrong in the Ukraine situation. Furthermore,
well, that's by definition.
Furthermore,
president can do nothing wrong.
Oh no, but here it goes even further. Furthermore, there was no Russian interference in the 2016 election. It was in fact all the Ukrainians.
Oh yeah, that's the new theory, isn't it?
That's the new theory. Indeed.
Well, you know, Ukraine, yeah. Russia. Ukraine used to be part of Russia.
Yeah, it's a denial of the evidence right in front of their faces.
Right.
And further, and I even heard this morning, Republican senators in the Congress now want to open investigations into Joe Biden and his son in Ukraine to determine whether or not the presence of Hunter Biden there had an effect on the Obama administration's foreign policy.
Yeah, that's
so they're all in for this.
Well, they are. And what's really weird is that Biden is not a viable candidate, really. I mean, it would really be a mistake to run Biden, to prop him up and have him, you know, move his mouth and talk, barely conscious, as I think he is.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's sad. It's sad.
And I think it's a tell on Trump's part that he looked at the field of potential opponents and decided that Biden was the most formidable and decided to concoct this smear campaign against Biden.
Right.
Right. Because none of these other people could possibly pose a threat to him, right? Not the women, certainly.
Oh, no. Women.
Not the old Jew from Brooklyn.
Oh,
certainly
no,
not.
No, not a Jewish guy.
No. Ooh. It's got to be. There's no black guy.
That's the problem. There used to be a black woman. Now she's gone.
Yeah, that's another whole question that we need to investigate on this show. How did the field of Democratic candidates somehow become purged of all of its non-white members? How did that happen? And the answer is pretty obvious, but I think we need to take another show and talk about that.
Well, we can certainly talk about that. It's very disappointing what went down, but it's always disappointing. Here's the thing, and I have to say this. I will hold my nose and vote for whoever isn't Trump. That's I'm stuck there. I can't not do that because Trump is a clear and present
it's
danger.
Such a pleasant danger. all right, well, let's take a phone call or two.
Yeah,
we'll get back into this. Mike, good morning.
Morning, KBOO.
Hello.
In all seriousness, Joe, how do you keep the sleeves of your velvet robe off the microphone and stuff?
Oh, he doesn't put that on until he goes home.
Oh, later on, okay.
Yeah, and then I don't smoke marijuana. I smoke tobacco. It's good.
Tobacco, okay.
Yeah. Sure.
I wondered, I just wanted to put it out there for everybody and you guys. Did anyone actually read and absorb the Ralph Nader book a few years ago? Basically appealing, you know, the left is going to need to appeal to billionaires and wealth because that's our system.
Yes, I remember that. I did not read the whole book, but I read several reviews of it. That's as close as I usually get. And it seemed to me then, and it's been proven, that Nader is functioning as many entrepreneurial would-be presidents are, spoilers. Even though he's got a lot of good things to say.
Go ahead.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I was just listening and thinking. I'd heard a few of his talks and lectures about the subject of the book and so forth during that time. I didn't read the book, that's why I was asking, but I wondered if there was some validity to what he was saying, just basically saying, you know, we need to get powerful people on our side because that's what it takes, I guess, in his... what was the summation of his point? I mean, it wasn't just about spoilers, it was about what the political system and his dealings, like you say, he's got so many organizations.
Well, he's got a lot of intelligent people supporting, or well, had, it's past now. But the problem, and it really is a serious problem, is that we have what is called laughingly a two-party system, and the right has occupied in the political military sense occupied the Republican Party to the extent that it is a quasi-fascist party. On the left, there's
a fully owned subsidiary for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And on the left, what we have is an indecisive struggle going on between people who recognize the need for things that are already done in capitalist countries in Europe, And we're having a resistance, of course, from the right on that. I just, for example, healthcare, which is a big thing for Bernie and a big thing for Elizabeth Warren and so on, healthcare is obviously something that should not be based on a profit motive for selling drugs and selling doctors. It should be a system-wide right for every citizen in a wealthy society like this. And yet,
and who's got the most commercials and most cavemen and lizards?
And so, but the fact of the matter is, we're still struggling around that. And I think it is really weird that the Democratic Party would even consider embracing the ex-vice president because, hey, he's not up for the job intellectually.
Sure, yeah. I think there was a chance those libertarian extremists to go Bernie's way back in the last one, but that's it. That, I'm not sure. But more specifically about the Ralph Nader thing in the book, did he propose any individuals that were sort of on the fence, billionaires that might be a traitor to their class?
I don't remember. I don't remember. You know, I've actually talked with Nader by phone quite a bit in the last couple of election cycles.
Oh, we've had him as guest
on
the show.
We've had him as a guest. And his trip is a fantasy. And his approach to the real world of politics draws a lot of people who would like to see something like what he wants to happen. But it's not real. It's not real at all. On the other hand, the rising interest particularly among young intelligentsia and working class people in a social democratic, now that's not socialism, social democratic candidate in the model of Sweden or Norway or Denmark is viable and could be done. It's not too far out. So I'm kind of thinking, gee, there's candidates out there who could at least in part fiddle the bill. Now let's be clear about this. Unless we can get a hold of the Senate, unless you and I and everybody in America recognizes the danger of the neo-fascist Republicans, it won't matter that much. Except that maybe we won't have so many wars. Maybe.
Yeah, we need another blue wave. Absolutely. And okay, that's guys, let's support our women and young folks and let's get it done. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the call, man.
The caller asked if there was perhaps a billionaire aspiring politician who would be a traitor to his or her class.
That's the idea.
Yeah, I think you could credibly say that Tom Steyer is that candidate.
Well, he's the closest to that.
He's the closest to that, yeah.
But we don't know. I don't know him.
No, I don't know him either. And that's the inherent problem with somebody who has a whole bunch of money deciding that entitles him or her to run for president.
Well, here's the most weird part about this. People like you and I would often say, look, it's money that rules. And then people say, mm-hmm. Well, no, this. The fact of the matter is that the test of does money really out front rule is right now both Steyer and I hate to say his name, Bloomberg.
Yeah, but I disagree.
Okay.
Yeah, money rules, but where that money comes from makes all the difference. The person who consistently, of the candidates who are out there raising their own money, let's be honest, the one who consistently does the best is Bernie Sanders.
Yeah. He's not rich.
No, he's not. Nor are his donors. And he will not take money from those rich donors. And
right.
He makes a point of it. But his support is so deep and growing that every time he needs to, he's able to go to his online cash register and take out some money.
It does seem so.
Yeah. And the success of that model, at least to date, I think goes a long way to disprove what we have all come to accept as normal, which is the way that money lubricates the skids for any candidate for public office, whether it's for Congress or for the presidency.
You mean like bull walks and money talks?
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, it's as we've said on the, as you just mentioned, we said on this program many times, yes, money is going to make the difference of whether or not you're elected president of the United States. So the question then becomes, how do you get that money? And I think the Sanders model indicates that we don't have to play the game the way it has always been played.
Well, I agree. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how the struggle within the Democratic Party and the fearfulness of many liberals leads to a mushy, vaguey candidate, which right now is not even in the wings.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, they go with the rich guy.
I think there's mushy Vegi candidates in the wings, but we'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Okay.
Let's go to Phil. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning. I want to proceed with the words that came from the previous caller about a blue wave. Mm-hmm. Bringing on the blue wave, I think, is the topic of your program this morning. What we in Oregon, as KBOO listeners and our friends, can do to bring on the blue wave. And I have a suggestion. I believe that we need to unite all progressive action and call it a blue wave or whatever, call it a progressive action day, have many of them, certainly one big one, before the Oregon primary.
And well, you want to call, wait, is this going to be like a holiday or is this going to be like a day of action?
A day of action, progressive action day.
Okay.
And there'd be several of them throughout the state. But in Portland Metro, we'd have, we have somehow rented the convention center and we can converge on trains as we did for the Women's March and exceed the turnout of the Women's March, because we are all compelled to do that. We're ashamed that we haven't had a sequel to that. We want to bring out 200,000 people at least on that first Progressive Action Day and have that the event where there are debates for real contention for 3rd and 5th District congresspersons, and every deal needing to have petition signatures gathered happens on that day. All of a sudden we could get 200,000 signatures and maybe have an Oregon State Bank. We have so many things that we could accomplish if we just turn out.
Well, I think theoretically you're right. Whether or not that's a practical thing has to do with all kinds of factors, including, sadly, the local media, the local television media in particular, which is not only intellectually bereft, but blah. You know, you ever watch evening news? Whoa!
I know that Channel 6 is...
well, I wouldn't pick any particular one. I mean, they're all bad.
Yeah. But if we had a particular channel televising the debates, I'd pick that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you want to see a series of events staged both for us as reinforcement of our beliefs, but also to reach out to other people. Is that it, in
essence? To give contending candidates a chance. Right now, the incumbents will not allow debates. They intend to win on name recognition, which is putrid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree, and I would back such an effort.
Well, there's only one caveat here. I think we happen to have several good members of the House of Representatives and actually two very good senators in Oregon.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't throw them out.
Let whoever comes up for election in the Democratic primary be a choice of the people well informed.
Okay,
fair
who
enough.
Can argue?
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah.
Thank
you for the call.
Yeah.
You know, it'd also be nice to have the Oregon primary early enough so that it actually made a difference.
Well, it used to be fun. 231-8187.
All right. So here's where I am with all this. Okay.
I don't. Where are you with all this?
I'm beholding a very large and very frightening structural paradox.
Oh, a structural paradox. Does it have four legs or more?
No, it's more of an abstraction.
I see.
Okay. I think that in terms of raw numbers, and if national polling data is to be believed, there are far more members of the American electorate that want Trump out of office than want to retain him for another 4 years.
Oh, for sure.
The problem, and we've talked about this at length on this program, is that the structural realities of the American political system favor the conservative party at this moment in time and have for some time now. So that means in order to oust this guy, even though public support is overwhelmingly against him, means that we not only have to overcome those intrinsic structural iniquities, we have to overcome other nefarious actions as well, like the voter suppression, which has only become more entrenched.
Well, it's really very powerful and very ugly.
Indeed. So not only does our silly 18th century electoral software, not only is it out of date and badly in need of an upgrade, mm-hmm. We have people out there actively working to ensure that the wrong people can't cast a vote.
The wrong people in
the
quotes.
The wrong people in quotes.
As in women, persons of color.
Persons of color.
Et cetera.
Yeah, exactly. So these are the things that we have to deal with. Fortunately, there are people making strides to combat this sort of thing. Stacey Abrams, who some argue, actually won the race for the governorship of Georgia.
She did. She did.
Has been organizing on a national level to fight a voter disenfranchisement.
Right.
So they're out there. There's another super PAC that's been formed that is collecting a big pile of money that's going to go to whomever gets the Democratic nomination.
Right.
So, I mean, there are ways. There are ways to address these structural iniquities and the other, the hanky-panky that I mentioned. But it's going to take a lot. It is going to take unprecedented voter turnout. We're going to need as many people to turn up and vote this time as turned up in 2008 to put Barack Obama in the White House.
Yeah, and that's, remember, putting Barack Obama in the White House, while he was an okay liberal guy, mm-hmm. okay, not great, okay, he could get nowhere with this Congress.
That's true, he couldn't.
So it isn't just the presidency.
No, it isn't just the presidency.
It's the Senate.
It is also, yes. And that's where these structural iniquities come to light again. I mean, you consider the fact that Wyoming, with fewer than 500,000 people, has the same amount of Senate representation in the Senate as California, with close to 50 million people.
Yes.
And that's a head-scratcher. It should not be so, yet it is. And the likelihood of the Wyoming, to the two Senate seats from Wyoming going over to the Democrats is exceedingly low. So there's yet another structural flaw that we have to contend
with. Well, there's that. And then, of course, there's the whole weirdness of how the president is selected by the Electoral College.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah.
You don't even have to finish high school to be in the Electoral College.
No. No, you don't. But they don't award degrees, kind of like Trump's university.
Yeah. Oh, hey, whatever happened to Trump's university?
He settled it for $25 million.
Here's
another structural inequity we have to face. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Let's cast our minds back in time. It's the months leading up to the election in 2008. Suddenly, Democratic presidential hopeful Barack Obama, it is revealed that he has for years been scamming people out of millions of dollars with a fake university. And he has to pay a $25 million settlement literally weeks before people go to the polls. Can you imagine?
Well, I can't imagine it in him because he's pretty righteous.
No, that's not the can you imagine I'm getting at.
Oh, sorry,
I mean, can you imagine the spontaneous combustion in conservative craniums that would happen across the nation?
Gosh, blown up heads.
No, it goes even farther. And, it almost seems cliche at this point. It probably is. Can you imagine a Democratic president who colluded with a hostile foreign power to game an election? Can you imagine the response from the right if that had happened? Can you imagine the response from the right if a Democratic president had gone to another foreign leader and tried to extort his help in cheating in yet another election? Can you imagine that?
I can imagine that, but I can't believe that would happen.
Can you imagine? No, again, I'm talking about the uproar.
Oh, the uproar.
From the other side.
The reaction.
The reaction, both from the news media and from conservatives. Can you imagine if a Democratic president had been making money, profiting from his office from the moment he took the oath? Can you imagine?
Well, can you imagine a president who said he'd never play golf because he'd just be too busy, and yet spends all of his time playing,
right,
cheating at golf.
Right. But all of this is to say that in addition to the electoral structural problems that I would just finish talking about, we have this incredible double standard in perception and criticism that we have to deal with as well.
Well,
can you imagine if a Democratic presidential hopeful had paid hush money to a porn star? Would that person have any chance of winning the election at all?
Well, you know.
Okay. I think I made my point.
I think you did.
Yeah.
I think you really strongly made your point.
Okay.
And yet, there is, 30 to 40% of American voters who are ready to go and ignoring the intellectual failings, ignoring the political wrongness, ignoring the absolute horror of Trump, are willing to vote for him.
Yeah, indeed. They are. And with a smile on their faces and a song in their heart, yes, wrapped in the flag and carrying a cross, as Upton Sinclair predicted.
That's exactly what Upton Sinclair predicted.
Yeah.
Of course, he believed that milk could cure everything.
Yeah, well.
That's a sidebar that shouldn't have been said.
So that is the conundrum in which we find ourselves. The conundrum in which most of the country wants things to go in a radically different direction, a radically progressive direction compared to the status quo. But they're looking at all this inertia that must be overcome. And I say must be overcome because it must be. It's going to take a organization on a grand scale. It's going to take progressive days of action, like our caller wisely recommended to us.
Maybe I wasn't clear on that. I thought that was a good idea. It's an abstract idea at this point, but yep. It's a good idea.
It's going to take people in voting precincts, not like here in Oregon where you can put your ballot in the mail and send it off.
Right. Nothing so reasonable.
Yeah. We're looking at the very real possibility. In fact, I would be astonished if this were not to happen. On election day this year, people showing up, perhaps even bearing arms, trying to intimidate people away from the polls.
Well, and then there's a whole structural way that the Republicans are trying to disallow anyone to vote.
Yeah, indeed.
I mean, this is really a very serious challenge to the idea of the Republic.
Yeah, and I'm glad you framed it that way, because I think that's precisely what we're talking about. We are looking here at a set of circumstances that could add up in the not too distant future to the end of representative democracy as we understand it in this country. This is not hyperbole. This is real. We are staring into the abyss as we speak.
And the great irony of this is it has never been not a contest around money.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But despite it all, we have managed to maintain more or less the structure and the integrity of our institutions and of our norms, such that we can function, if not perfectly, at least in a rough approximation of a representative democracy over the years, right? Can we agree on that?
No, I'm not sure I agree with that.
That we the rough approximation of a representative democracy?
No. Remember that until 1900, the Senate was chosen by the state legislature.
I understand that.
I mean, come on.
Okay, yes. But that was a problem that was remedied, was it not?
It is sort of remedied.
Still,
money talks while you know what walks.
Yep. There used to be a significant percentage of the population in the United States that was owned, enslaved, and bought and sold as chattel in this country.
Right.
And
of course, women were a kind of other kind of chattel.
Another kind of chattel, who were only given the right to vote 100 years ago. The point I'm trying to make is that as time has progressed, we have managed, despite it all, to rise above and enfranchise more people, and spread the circle of equals wider to increase the liberty in which everyday people live their lives. This is a fact. This is a fact. And it has happened despite all these structural iniquities, despite the corrosive role that money has played in politics. We have nonetheless managed to lurch toward enlightenment in this country.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that positive position you hold. I'm not sure that the United States is the good guy in history.
Slavery has been abolished.
Yes.
Right. Women have been given the right to vote.
Yes.
An openly gay man is now running for president and is a contender.
Yes.
An African-American man has held the highest office in the land.
Yes.
All these things have happened.
Yes.
The Voting Rights Act was passed. The Civil Rights Act was passed. The Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act.
Yeah.
All of these things have happened.
Yeah, and we did away with the threat of the destruction of the ozone layer.
Right. We legalized marijuana.
Oh, who gives a...
It fits the paradigm. So what I'm saying to you, Joe, is despite your cynicism, and I think your claim of optimism was fake earlier, you're a cynic. Despite it...
I'm experienced.
We have managed to lurch toward enlightenment over the generations in this country. That is in jeopardy.
Well, to the degree that I agree with you that about possibilities, I agree. And I certainly understand the difference between the kind of conservative capitalist system we have and the madness of fascism that's represented by Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have a crisis that really needs to be addressed. You know, we got a lot of callers, and you and I prattle on, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be good to call them. 231-8187. Brian, you're on the air.
Oh, wow. Hi. Yeah. I'm sorry to say this, Joe, but I think that's Abe 1, Joe 0 right now.
Hey! What is this a contest? Is this a game?
Yeah, it's a game. I'm calling in with the scores. So, yeah, good job, Abe. You also rattled off all the things that Trump's gotten away with, and I can't keep all this stuff in my brain. I'm probably not alone. And when somebody rattles them all off, I just like, oh, my God. Yeah, it's like one after another. Any one of them would shot Obama completely down. But
right? You can't even conceive of somebody holding on to office from the other side.
it's just mind-boggling when you rattle them all off and put them all in one place. Like it kind of blew the other thought that I had, the reason I called, out of my brain, but I think I got it back. You were talking about the Senate and how the Senate is, you know, representation, where Montana has the same as California. And I just wanted to, I don't have much to offer to this. I just had a question about, isn't the concept of the tyranny of the majority really important, that the Senate plays a part in keeping that from happening, or is that no longer, is that antiquated? Is that a has-been idea?
Well, the concept of the tyranny of the majority is something that's been a factor in American politics, and indeed was taken into consideration by the framers of the Constitution. But I think the fact that the Senate is organized as it is was less to guard against the tyranny of the majority than it was to protect the prerogatives of the slave-owning class in the South.
Well, I think that's true. And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about the Constitution. It's a brilliant document. There's many good things in it, and certainly the Bill of Rights is very important adjunct to that. But the fact of the matter is that the document that was put together really was an accommodation for slaveholding, an accommodation for not just racism, but sexism, and for its time, progressive, but in fact very reactionary document, which persists. There's a lot of needs. There's a lot of needs in the structure of our political system that need to be that should be addressed and are unlikely to be addressed in our lifetimes. I'm sad to say.
Yeah. To give you an example, as political and social tensions increased in the years leading up to the Civil War, until ultimately the social fabric was strained to the breaking point in the United States, tyranny of the majority was what the Southern slaveholding class called the abolitionist movement.
Yeah.
That they were simply going to vote our way of life out of existence. This is tyranny of the majority. So you have to take that concept with a grain of salt.
Wow, yeah. Oh, excellent. Thank you for giving me something to chew on. And great. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
I don't know that that's going to help, though.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Hey, listen, folks. This is an election that is winnable by progressives. It is time for everyone to stop nitpicking, and this is really a problem, to stop worrying about age, another problem, to stop even worrying about whether or not there's a candidate of color, or whether or not it's going to be a woman or a man. These are not the issues of prominence right now. The prominent issue, the real issue, and the only issue for the moment, and this is just for the moment, you know, up until after the election, this is a time when both the Senate and the presidency must be changed by legitimate means.
Yeah, I agree.
And to argue that is, I mean, I don't think our audience would argue, but it's just a misunderstanding. Fundamentally, that's got to be changed. Now, putting in a Bloomberg will not change that.
No.
Although I welcome his money, let him waste it.
I think that concept is immaterial to him. As I said a couple of weeks ago on the show, he's worth about $60 billion.
Is he really?
Yeah, he earns about $2 billion a year from that money and interest. He's spending this year's $2 billion to run for president.
Yeah, what
this is
hell?
A game for him.
Well, and the guy is a fundamentally deceptive liar.
Yeah, he is. All right, let's take care of a little biz, and we'll go back to the phones. Coming up this morning on KBOL at 9 on Alternative Radio, we hear part one of a two-part series from the editor of Tikkun magazine, Rabbi Michael Lerner.
About I know faith, Michael Lerner.
Politics and the Left. Yeah, well, now you can hear him on the radio.
Boy, oh boy.
At 10 on Flashpoints, Bernie Sanders visits the Bay Area. At 11 on stage and studio, host D. Mae Roberts speaks with actor, director, and artistic director of Confrontation Theater, Letevin Alexander. And at 11:30, it's Art Focus. Amanda Clem speaks with Christine Miller and Brittany Vega about their exhibition, American Hex. All this and more.
Okay.
This morning on KBOO. You can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or wherever you find podcasts.
Podcasts.
Yeah.
Podcast.
This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, also available as a podcast.
Podcast.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. You can also write to us at the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or you can tweet at HonestAbe72.
Yes, and I might add, we had a lot of people wanting to call us, and interestingly enough, it's all guys. Now, last week it was mostly women. It's your fault.
I guess so.
Okay, 231-8187. Steve, you're on the air.
First of all, I want to apologize for being a guy. Get that out of the way.
Oh, stop.
Hey, no, I'm the politically loneliest guy in America. I have friends on the left and friends on the far right, and it's to be a centrist in these times is it's difficult. It's challenging, and I want to point out.
Yeah, my heart bleeds for you, Caucasian man.
I expect it would. I expect it would. The key is with cynicism. You mentioned that we all suffer from it. It's a cowardly form of superiority. It's also the result of a cynic is just a disillusioned idealist. You could think about that. But as far as the support for Bernie and the disgust with Bloomberg, this is the challenge I have with the far left and my friends on the progressive left, is that the good is the enemy of the perfect. And would it be good to replace Trump? Absolutely. Would Bloomberg be an improvement over Trump? I think certainly. But if he's not perfect, which, you know, Bernie is as close to, you know, the ideal on the far left, and if he's not perfect, we're gonna crucify him. And I see this as discouraging. So, but as the big answer for the upcoming election is a peaceful, massive Democratic demonstration. I think if we can't organize peacefully, and in Portland, we're horrible at it. We let these Antifa knuckleheads hijack peaceful protests. So if we can first of all be disciplined enough to have massive civil disobedience without having it hijacked by, you know, Antifa crackpots, then we might have a chance at a large, massive civil demonstration on election day, because that's what's going to be required when the election is disputed, is for a massive outpouring. The same has occurred after Trump's election, the Women's March. We simply need to do that. It's like,
well, all right.
Okay. A big rally on election day and leading up to election day. That's great.
Sound and fury signifying nothing.
Yeah, indeed. I have to object to the way you're brushing off Antifa the way you are, or the way you're characterizing Antifa.
Well, I think that Antifa is a very complex. It is a very complex phenomenon,
and not a monolithic one.
And yeah, and it really needs analysis, and it needs criticism and support. Ironically, mm-hmm. both.
We should all be anti-fascist, should we not?
I am a very strong anti-fascist.
But yes,
I'm not into masks, though. I don't like covering my face. It's
special,
so
occasions, maybe. You know, but yes, lots of bodies in the streets on election day is great. Leading up to election day is great.
Not if they don't vote.
And I'm calling on every listener to this program between now and election day to get yourself out in the street. Find a cause you believe in, and if other people are out there demonstrating, get out there and join them. Or pick up the torch and lead the crowd yourself.
Well,
no, maybe torch.
Torch isn't very.
No torches, no
torches,
pitchforks.
Allowed, please.
Pitchforks, torches, no.
No, I think.
Pick up your phone.
I think that when you are in the statistical minority, you are absolutely duty bound to be nonviolent.
Yeah.
So.
Well, whether or not you're in the minority, you're absolutely duty bound to be nonviolent, period, when you are expressing your political views in this society. Violence is not an acceptable political tool.
I don't agree.
Yeah, you don't agree?
I really don't.
Okay.
I think we're getting to the point where we're going to be like Germany. We're going to have a actual armed resistance.
You think it's going to come to that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think we're seeing the end of this quote-unquote democracy as we know it. I'm very frightened by this. The fact that an idiot, a true idiot, who cheats at golf, who brags about his assaulting women, who is in fact a liar in every speech he makes, in every word he tweets, is popular, means that there's a whole bunch of people out there that have been poorly educated and angry and unreservedly racist and sexist and so on, and they're going to elect this fool again?
Yes.
That's so creepy.
It is creepy, yeah.
I can't get my head around it.
John tweets at us at HonestAbe72. There are two words people should keep in mind for November: federal judgeships.
Good point.
Including the probable need for RGB's, that's Ruth Bader Ginsburg, so it's RBG.
Yeah.
RBG's replacement. Yes, that's a very good point. But as we've already seen, even having a Democrat in the White House is no guarantee that that president will actually be able to successfully confirm a Supreme Court justice.
No.
Or even have that nominee receive a hearing on the floor of the Senate.
Yeah, no, there's no question about the situation in terms of what I would call fascism with a friendly face that is going on right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is a very scary, very, very scary situation. The looming destruction of the environment, the looming obviousness of the injustices within the structure of human life in our society, the inability to understand the simple idea of a national health plan. I mean, it's all very peculiar, and it's all very frightening, and it's all very reactionary, even in the context of capitalism. Sorry.
Let's go to the phones. Mike, you're next.
Yeah, I wanted to disagree with a comment I heard about slavery.
Sure.
Being abolished. You know, maybe chattel slavery did, but economic slavery still exists. And after slavery, you're not talking about segregation. After slavery, you're not talking about the Tuskegee experiment where white folks was injecting black people with syphilis and stuff like that. You're not talking about Democrats coming up with the crime bill where a lot of black people are languishing in your penitentiaries that Democrats put together. You're not talking about medical experiments that are being done on prisoners, particularly black prisoners that occupy your jails. So, you know, I reject anybody talking about slavery has been abolished because that's a myth. And only pseudo-intellectuals spouse that type of nonsense because slavery is alive and well. It just have metamorphosis into a different form. And so I just wanted to call you out. I used to be a Democrat. I reject Democrats now. As a matter of fact, I voted for Trump a couple of times.
Oh, man, really?
And, a couple of times? Really, I thought I only ran once.
Once. I voted for Trump. I'm going to vote for him again. And the reason being is that Democrats are for open borders. And when these unemployed people come into the country, the first group of people that they are going to be a threat to are poor black people. Where Democrats are for open borders. Democrats want to give all the accomplishments that black people have made, all the civil rights struggles that black people went through. All the illegal aliens have to do is walk in here now, and they just hand it to them.
Well,
They don't have to deal with policemen and water hoses, policemen and their dogs. They don't have to deal with.
No, they just have to be thrown into concentration camps and separated from their children.
What about black people?
Well, give me just a moment to respond, sir. Okay, first of all, I'll accept your criticism that I left a great deal out of my summation of a broad swath of history. When I talked about the abolition of slavery, yes, you're right. I did not go on to talk about segregation or Jim Crow. I did not talk about the Tuskegee experiments or any of those atrocities that you mentioned. Yes, those absolutely happened. Those are absolutely worthy of condemnation, and they're absolutely worthy of discussion. In my defense, I was attempting to make a very quick summation of a very broad span of history. So naturally, there are some things that I left out. And if I offended you in doing so, you have my apology. But I think that you are mischaracterizing the experience of those people who flee to this country seeking asylum when you say that they have everything handed to them.
And that they take the jobs that would go to African Americans. I don't think that's real.
I think that's inaccurate.
Well, first of all, it's not inaccurate because when you get a bunch of people coming in here that are semi-literate, unemployed, and matter of fact, all those homeless people coming here, you notice that they're absence from homelessness. They're not out on the street homeless. Americans out there homeless, and most of them are white. So what happens when all those unemployed people come to America? How come they find housing and jobs and medical and all that other stuff?
Man, I gotta interrupt you because you're really mischaracterizing what's going on.
You think you know what's going on. I do know what's going on.
Okay, man, we're gonna have to agree to disagree and let that go because I want to get some other people on the air.
Okay, who's next? Paul, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
So all politics is local. Remember that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And?
Is Cebu still a community radio station?
Yeah.
Okay. So how come, you know, there's fascism, not creeping fascism, and it doesn't have a kinder face unless you're white, and it's going on right here in River City. So why aren't we talking about the racist cops and the gang enforcement team that get promoted up and get golden parachutes, and they go to head of police in West Lynn, and then they attack black people because they're black?
We have talked about this. We're just not talking about it today.
Well, I think we should talk about that a little bit more.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's go to Corey. Good morning. Good morning.
Morning, guys. I'll be brief. That last caller, Mike, I don't know if I'm upset or confused, but I just know that I'm in the classroom a lot. I know you guys are all educators, and I can just say as a fact that there's something going on in this country where America has become this cult of ignorance. I work out. I'm at the gym, and I see three older white Americans. They're watching InfoWars, and then I listen to their conversation. Man, I'm glad Alex Jones is the only guy that tells the truth.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, this is pervasive. These are older men at the YMCA of all places watching Alex Jones talking about he's the only guy that tells the truth. And so I'm kind of confused by that, and these are older people. On the flip side, I have younger people. I had a student turn in a paper the other day that was 100% plagiarized, 100%. Like,
wow, not even giving you the grace of a few personal sentences.
She changed my name, and that was about it. I'm sorry, I said she. But when she turned the paper in, this is why I'm kind of at this defeatist. She was upset with me. Why didn't you give me a second chance?
You should have asked her to improve her penmanship, and then you'd reconsider.
Exactly, if she was actually writing it. But then finally, to my point about Mike, he's talked about this open borders thing before, and the poor. I'm a black person. I'm a professor. My sister's a doctor. Immigrants often fill the jobs that Americans don't want.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
You know, if this whole myth that Latinos, especially Mexicans, are coming over here and taking these jobs, it's simply statistically not true, because these jobs are for people that don't want them. I am not going to knock the hard work and hard ethics of people who come to this country, because I know I'm not doing that. I'm not going out there doing that. I know that. I mean, I'm not doing that type of job. So this myth that he's been speaking about for years, it is a myth, and I'll just leave it at that. I'll talk to you guys next week.
No, I'm really glad you called.
Yeah, thank you.
And
for the call.
I think it's important to understand one of the most dangerous things about doing a show like this is one or two people representing whatever group they represent become the representative of that group.
Yeah,
and that is, we're only hearing opinions from various people. And it's important to understand that. In fact, it's a special subset, people who are willing to call into our radio station.
I actually feel I'm a perfect representative for bearded redheaded people.
I didn't know you were
bearded. I speak for
redheaded.
All bearded redheaded people.
I just thought you dressed bad, man. I didn't know. Okay. Well, all right. Getting serious once again. The fact of the matter is that the big, overwhelming, scary stuff like climate change has to be addressed. And right now, the scariest part of the problem is, in fact, the presidency and the Senate. And we have to deal with that. I personally believe that the thing to do is to embrace a social democratic candidate, whoever it is. I think that's necessary. I think that most of the otherwise candidates, and I really like Amy, by the way, interpersonally, I think she's great. But I don't think she's going to be willing or desirous of making the major changes that are necessary to make the politics of the United States correct.
I would agree with that. Although there has been some reporting that she does not treat her staff very well.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. In fact, as heaps scoring on them, has even thrown things at them.
Throwing things?
Yeah, there's a New York Times piece.
No, that's good.
Several months old now.
Throwing things is good.
Yeah. But I digress. Go ahead. Continue.
No. I just think that we need to keep in mind what really needs to be done. And I really think that the dangers are so enormous that the only thing we can argue about here is strategy. And the fact of the matter is that if we go with, any of the middle-run Democrats, we're going to be missing the opportunities that are absolutely necessary to make real social change in America. And if we do that, then what? So what? You know, so what? We won't have any kind of real change. In the onrushing scariness of what's really going on in the physical universe. Sigh.
Let's take a couple more calls.
Yeah, let's do that.
Mark, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'd like to make several points quickly. Number one, Trump, in his two tax heists, took $8 trillion from the country and gave it to corporations and households with over $1 million.
That's absolutely true. Mm-hmm.
So he cut everything but the military. This is there were no hearings. This is a tremendous blow to democracy. The second point was that it was Lonnie Guinier, who for a time was Attorney General under Clinton, who urged majority rule and minority protection, which I think is a very very helpful perspective. I'm just amazed how conservative, how oblivious our conservative corporate press is. And someone called in on the David Pakman show on the computer and asked, when will Joe Biden drop out? And to me, that's an exciting question. It's kind of speculative, but we ought to reflect on that. Would that increase Bernie's chances or Elizabeth's chances? So the left and the center have to agree, have to join hands, right? I was so sure that 10 Republicans would refuse to go down with Trump. I have to develop a coping strategy because he's so off the rails. He's a rambling incoherence.
True. Let me touch on something you said there. You said that the left and the center need to agree. I think that there is much more agreement between the left and the center than we often realize. Polling data, again, is to be believed. There's a lot more people out there, for example, who support a single-payer health care system, but are scared that it won't be accepted by the broader electorate in the general election. Therefore, they're more inclined to back a candidate who is not pushing a single-payer health care system, even though that's what they think will best serve the country.
It's interesting.
So there's more agreement than we think, but there's also more fear than we think.
Yes.
Yeah, you know what? We kind of run out of time.
We have.
And I know that we hardly ever scrape beyond the surface, but I also know that we need to understand that there are things that can be done and should be done, and I hope will be done, to make things better. Meanwhile, I don't think that the Bloomberg thing, even though there's money there, is a solution to anything.
No. Thanks, everybody, as ever, for your insightful comments. And we'll be back at you next week.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder.
This is KBOO Portland. After these messages, it's alternative radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Create and Celebrate, a night celebrating Black creativity and power on Wednesday, February 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Grant High School Auditorium in Portland. Create and Celebrate is a showcase of young Black creative talent, including performances of poetry, dance, and music from students across Portland. Again, that's Create and Celebrate, a night celebrating Black creativity and power on Wednesday, February 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Grant High School Auditorium, 2245 Northeast 36th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-